All right, so we're in Visual Studio World again. Who are you? What's going on here?
Sure. Yeah, my name is Scott Guthrie. I'm a general manager in the developer division here at Microsoft. And basically, I run the teams that build the CLR, .NET Compact Framework, ASP.NET, Windows Presentation Foundation, Windows Forms, IIS, Commerce Server, Silverlight, and the Visual Studio tools for client and web development. So
that's incredible. Yeah, we just interviewed your boss, Soma. He was on Channel 9 recently.
Cool. Yeah.
And Orcus, so congratulations to you too, Orcus Beta 1.
Yeah, we have three big things coming out this week. We have Orcus Beta 1 that just went on the web. We have IIS 7 with Windows Longhorn Server, which should be on the web tomorrow, or which is Wednesday of probably the previous week that you're seeing this video.
Yeah.
And then we have Silverlight going live. I guess it'll be this week when this video is watched. So it's been a fairly hectic last couple of weeks.
Insane
would be one way to describe it, yeah.
So let's talk a little bit about one of the things about Silverlight. So for example, let's step back. Have you tell me, what is Silverlight? How's that for a question for you?
Sure, yeah. I mean, at a high level, Silverlight provides a cross-platform, cross-browser plugin that works on the Mac, it works on Windows, it works in IE, it works in Firefox, it works in Safari, it will work in Opera.
Cool.
And it basically allows you to go ahead and build much richer experiences that run inside a browser. And so you can incorporate media, so we have very rich video and audio support, so you can stream video, you can do really dazzling effects with video, really incorporate video in a very, very rich way inside your site. It provides a very rich vector graphic system, so you can really do dazzling graphics, and you can build kind of UI that isn't possible to build in HTML.
Awesome.
And then it's designed to fit inside a web page, so obviously you can use HTML as well. And one of the big things that we're announcing at Mix this week is that we're also shipping a version of the .NET framework with Silverlight.
Wow.
And you can program against all these experiences, whether it's HTML, whether it's media, whether it's vector graphics on the client in a cross-platform way using any managed language. So you can use it with C#, you can do it with VB, you can do it with Python, you can do it with JavaScript, you can do it with Ruby.
All right, so now, of course, this begs the question. First of all, that's amazing news.
Yeah.
The question that I would ask is, that's an awfully large download, right? Isn't that what people are going to say? And it's also, how the heck can the framework work on a Mac?
Yeah, it's a lot of features. If you add up all the graphics features, all the media features, all the runtime features, all the language features, it's a pretty broad set of features. You know, from a .NET framework perspective, we have things like link included.
Mm-hmm.
We have network stack.
Wow.
We have a threading model. We have base class libraries. We have a lot of features.
Mm-hmm.
The way we've designed the overall experience, we've squeezed it down to a package that's about 4 megabytes.
Incredible.
With all those features. Over time, we'll probably factor it slightly differently, so we think the core download might get even smaller.
Mm.
But with all those features, with the alpha that we're shipping this week, it's actually 4 megabytes, and it's designed to be installed on a system in 20 seconds or less.
Nice.
And so, you know, basically you have a web page, you click a link, it'll stream down, and there's no kind of EULA, there's no start or finish. It's a very consumer-friendly install, and you know, basically from the point that you start downloading it to the point that it's installed in your system, you know, hopefully it's a 20 or 30 second from downloading it to actually installing it on the system and you're ready to go.
That's amazing. Now, from a Windows perspective, I can sort of kind of immediately see how you could pull that off by paring down the base class library, maybe using the tiny CLR, maybe not using the tiny CLR.
Yeah, we're not using the tiny CLR. We actually, Silverlight includes for both the Mac and the Windows version. So one thing I should mention, that 4 meg download does not require the .NET framework installed in the system. It does not require Windows Media Player to be installed in the system. It includes everything inside the package necessary to run on a vanilla operating system with nothing installed.
Amazing.
It was a lot of work. But the other thing to mention is that the version of the CLR that we're shipping with Silverlight is based on the full desktop CLR that people use today.
Which one?
You can think of it as it's from the Orcus tree.
Okay.
But it's basically the same browser. So if you're running say Visual Studio, you're running Blend, or you're running ASP.NET, it's the same type system, the same jitter. It's the client garbage collector that we ship on Windows, And so it gives you really, really, really good performance.
Awesome.
And so, you know, in general, I think, you know, it depends on, you know, the exact benchmark that you measure, but you can see in some cases between 300 and 1,000 times faster performance than JavaScript, which mm-hmm. sounds ludicrous, but
it really is, actually.
Compiled. Yeah, it, you know, yeah, we can basically, you know, we're running pretty efficient code, and it's between 10 and 15 times faster than other competing kind of plug-in products. So it's a very fast execution engine, and you have a rich .NET programming environment that you can work with. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, performance is one thing, but having a rich feature set where you can incorporate data with Link, and you can data bind it to UI controls with WPF, and you can incorporate media, and you can apply, you know, vector transforms across all of that, all within a browser in a sandbox environment is pretty powerful.
It's incredibly powerful.
So yeah, we're pretty excited. It's been brewing for a while, and it's great to be able to finally ship it.
So cool. So again, just to stress home the fact, I mean, we're talking about I'm going to be able to, as a .NET developer, write in my favorite .NET language, really interesting and compelling web applications, mm-hmm. web UI in this thing called Silverlight.
Mm-hmm.
That's extraordinary, in my opinion. So the thing I have to ask is, how did you pull it off? I mean, how do you take the CLR and associated technologies and be able to make it run on a different platform? I mean, of course, it was designed to be platform independent very initially.
Yeah.
But so let's talk about that. IL, what's going on?
Yeah, I mean, certainly if you think about the way the .NET Framework binaries work in terms of the IL file format and the semantics that we introduced, it has always been designed to be basically CPU neutral and platform neutral. And so it's, you know, from the core architecture perspective, we did a lot of work there. Mm-hmm. You know, from a runtime perspective, you know, we did a lot of work kind of introducing, even as part of the .NET 2.0 release, kind of a platform abstraction layer, what we call a PAL layer, in the core engine. And so anytime we do a native OS operation, we go through this platform abstraction layer. Mm-hmm. And what that gives us is the ability that we can basically replace that PAL layer with a different layer, and basically have all the code on top run.
Nice.
And so, you know, the way we've basically architected the CLR is, and the way we want to have it, is be able to have a single source base that can generate versions that are optimized for different platforms, including different versions of Windows. You know, we can do the same kind of platform abstraction layer there as well. And so, it's a lot of work, but it gives us a lot of flexibility, and it also means that all of the benefits and all the performance benefits that we've put in place with the CLR in terms of enabling multi-core operations or multi-CPU operations and super efficient garbage collections for client apps and things like that, we're able to just automatically take advantage of with Silverlight, which, you know, helps with tremendously with some of the performance and some of the feature sets.
Interesting. So you mentioned architecture,
yep.
And this is going deep.
Sure.
And that's a whiteboard.
Sure.
So how about drawing out for us, like, you know, draw out what Silverlight is architecturally. I mean, like, you're just mentioning it has the, or at least the underlying, you know, the CLR infrastructure, right? I mean, we're all used to the CLR on the bottom and then mm-hmm. base class libraries, but this is more compact. So mm-hmm. It's really interesting to me to note a couple things, like, you know, it's not the same CLR that's on the desktop, is it?
Correct. It's not the same binary. It's a separate binary.
It has to be.
Than on the desktop, but it's derived from the same source tree.
Okay.
And so, you know, we do have, you know, ifdefs, and we do have, you know, inside our core source tree, mm-hmm. and we can basically build either for Silverlight, we can build for the full desktop CLR, and you know, and there's features that we do take out of the Silverlight CLR, so we don't have, for example, COM interop. Because that doesn't really make sense cross-platform and in a browser, which makes sense. We don't have a server garbage collector like we do with the .NET 2.0 release, which is a version of the garbage collector that's specifically optimized for server scenarios and ASP.NET and things like that.
Nice.
We don't need to ship that because this only runs in a browser. Yeah. And our loading semantics with how we basically load code, we rewrote quite a bit because we don't have Fusion and we don't have the global assembly cache and things like that. So it's there are certainly some changes, but from a type system perspective and from a jitter perspective, doing the just-in-time compilation as well as the garbage collection perspective, allows it to be the same code path. And then on top of that, we basically have a trimmed down version of the full .NET Framework class libraries.
Nice.
So it's not, you don't get all where 15 or 20,000 classes that we have now or APIs. Mm-hmm. You have a subset of those, and specifically a subset tailored towards building browser-based applications. So we do have, collections and I.O. and threading and regular expression engines and the XML stack and the networking stack. So we do have, the same namespaces and the same core types or classes as you have when you're building a client app today. But we don't, for example, in the Silverlight package have, NT service APIs or things that don't really make sense, obviously running in a sandbox browser.
Of course.
We then, from a UI perspective, have basically a subset of the WPF UI framework. Mm-hmm. And so specifically the same concepts in terms of canvases, in terms of XAML, in terms of elements. We have the same concepts, the same namespaces. And the goal is, if you write to the subset, you can actually build code that will run both in Silverlight as well as in a full WPF app.
Okay.
And so, we're certainly, one of the big things that we're trying to do with Silverlight is make sure we really maximize your skill set. So if you know .NET today, great, you now have an easy way you can go ahead and target applications that run in the browser in a really rich way without having to learn a whole bunch of new APIs.
Fantastic.
And likewise, once you learn the APIs of Silverlight, you can apply them towards full .NET Framework apps as well.
Excellent.
So, I think that from a existing .NET developer's perspective is huge, because it means now you can run .NET code in the client, you can run .NET code in the web server, you can run .NET code in the database, and you can also run .NET code on a standalone WPF client. And you can use the same languages, the same set of tools across all those four different tiers. And once you learn how to use generic collections, or you learn how to use link, or you learn how to use threading or anything like that, sure. It applies everywhere.
So in other words, in the Silverlight case, you do support system.threading?
We do have a system.threading namespace.
Pared down, or is it?
It's a little bit pared down. Okay. I mean, in terms of we will have the support, the ability to, for example, create threads.
Okay.
And so one kind of compelling thing, step back a little bit, one of the challenges with building a lot of browser apps today mm-hmm. is how do you handle calling back to the server, and how do you avoid what's called stalling the UI thread?
Yeah.
And so if you're programming with JavaScript, one of the challenges is the thread that your code runs on is the same thread that the browser uses to paint the screen. And so if you write, for example, an infinite loop in JavaScript, or you do something that takes a long time to compute in JavaScript, your browser UI won't repaint. And so your UI will appear sluggish, and you can even hang the browser if you create an infinite loop.
Sure.
And that's a big challenge when you're trying to build like a heavy-duty Ajax app, because you're always having to go back to the server to grab more data. And that operation, again, if you're not handling it correctly, it can really cause some performance problems. And so one of the things we're going to provide in Silverlight is the ability to do a background task. Mm-hmm. And that uses the system.threading namespace mm-hmm. that you might know today.
Sure.
And that gives you the ability, you can say, call this thing. When the data comes back, go ahead and spin up a thread, do all the work on it, and then effectively post a completion when it's time to paint. And, sorry.
No problem. Just your personal life.
Yeah, this is. Yeah,
it's like almost 7 o'clock in Redmond, and we're doing a Channel 9 interview.
Yeah. those types of kind of scenarios, the more advanced scenarios, but I think that kind of goes towards the richness, hopefully, that's in Silverlight from a .NET perspective. It's definitely not the time you see a LAR. It's definitely not 10 classes that look like .NET. Mm-hmm. It is really .NET, and gives you a lot of power.
Very cool. Excellent. I mean, I think that's what's most impressive about it, is that you're able to take the power of the CLR as it exists on the client and have it run on clients where there is no CLR installed.
Yeah, and that certainly, I think, is from our perspective, the key thing that we're trying to do is enable kind of the friction-free deployment of .NET.
Okay.
And do it in a way that lets you use HTML, use rich graphics, use media, mm-hmm. and really build kind of differentiated next generation experiences that you can't build today.
So let me ask you this though. Let's say I install on Windows, I install Silverlight.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have, for some reason, I wouldn't imagine why, I don't have the framework already
sure.
installed.
Yep.
And then I go and I try to run like an application a friend sent me that requires like framework 2.0.
Sure.
So my question really is, how sandboxed are these binaries from where typically the CLR loader is going to look for?
Mm-hmm.
It's
very sandboxed. So unless you're activating a Silverlight app, it's not going to pull in the CLR. And, or the CLR that ships with Silverlight. And that's very conscious. What we want to avoid is any chance of, I accidentally installed this thing and now it's interfering with something else in the system.
Excellent.
And so you can even actually, if you load the full .NET framework, CLR, as well as Silverlight in the same process, like if you have like an add-in or something,
mm-hmm.
they'll coexist peacefully.
Oh, that's an important point.
Which
so
is
you
important
can
point.
Do that.
You can do that. Yeah, that's
Sweet.
One of the engineering works we did. Yeah, which is different. Like today, you can't load .NET 2.0 and .NET 1.1 in the same process. You have problems.
Sure.
You absolutely can load Silverlight in either a 1.1 or a 2.0 process.
Excellent.
So that's a big architectural benefit.
Mm-hmm.
So it doesn't collide, won't cause any problems.
So now you mentioned that in the WPF world,
mm-hmm.
which is, abstracting DirectX, which is why I can do
mm-hmm.
real 3D.
Yeah.
The Silverlight obviously isn't taking advantage of that. DirectX doesn't run on the Mac, right?
Correct. Yeah.
So is it? It's not necessarily, it might be vector, but it's not necessarily really 3D. Or is it? Let's talk about that.
Correct. Yeah, I mean, there's a couple different dimensions. Like one is, is there a 3D graphics API that specifically lets you, for example, create a scene with objects and then position like lights and cameras,
mm-hmm.
which WPF, the full WPF that ships on Windows gives you.
Sure.
We don't have that support in Silverlight, primarily because that really requires hardware acceleration
mm-hmm.
on a device in order to perform acceptably. You can certainly simulate 3D with Silverlight, but you're not getting kind of a low-level 3D API as part of the package, but you can, for example, simulate it. And people try to do that with, sometimes with Ajax or with Flash or things like that. And so you can certainly do all those effects with Silverlight. And we have a few samples that kind of do 3D-esque things.
Mm-hmm.
But if you want like super rich 3D graphics like WPF provides, you'll want to use the full WPF for that.
Sure, but you could write interesting Silverlight sort of games.
Oh, absolutely.
Or
yeah.
like a Silverlight, I could see a use of Silverlight. I know Bill Gates always talks about something that he would love to do is be able to not only shop at like someplace like Amazon,
mm-hmm.
but really walk through aisles
yeah.
and pick things out. You could actually develop that sort of experience with this technology.
You can do a little bit with that with Silverlight. One of the challenges in general with doing 3D in the browser is browsers typically don't handle hardware acceleration very well. They're built with graphics APIs that don't support hardware acceleration, so it's a little hard to kind of embed a 3D experience in a browser. You can kind of do that a little bit with WPF if you're careful with how you dock the control.
Okay.
But inside the browser, certainly you can do it with a standalone out of the browser experience.
Absolutely.
One of the things that we are looking to enable is the ability for people to build applications that run in the browser using Silverlight.
Mm-hmm.
That provide works everywhere kind of experience, and if you want to, you can build a super rich experience that runs outside the browser.
Okay.
And so you could absolutely do Amazon online and then have that Amazon shopping experience in 3D run outside the browser as well.
Very cool. So now you mentioned cross-platform.
Mm-hmm.
Currently the platforms that are supported are Mac and Windows.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't mean that no other platforms are never going to, it doesn't mean
yeah.
that we're not going to support anything. I mean, that's the first question that's going to come up on the thread for this video,
yeah.
is what about the other platforms?
Yeah.
And so you mentioned PAL.
Yep. Yeah.
It can happen and people could implement
sure.
it.
Yeah, and
right?
certainly, I mean, we're not religious at all in terms of what platforms we support, per se. I mean, some people might be religious, but we're not, from our team's perspective. Right now, we've basically chosen to kind of optimize for Mac and Windows, primarily because those are the two most common operating systems on the internet today.
Okay.
And they're about 98% of desktop operating systems.
Mm-hmm.
We're also looking at mobile devices, and so looking at how could we support a
wow.
mobile device space from a user perspective. Probably mobile devices is actually the next operating system space that gives you the most reach.
True.
And that has huge, you know, potential numbers.
And then you will be implementing this with tiny CLR, huh?
Well, yeah. The challenge with mobile devices is there's, you know, there's 120 different different types, and so
yeah,
you know, that is one area that we're, you know, looking pretty closely on exactly you know, the best way to implement that. And then there's obviously operating systems like Linux clients and so on, and you know, there it's, you know, again, we're not super religious as to which platforms we support or not. We basically picked in the first release, you know, we had to optimize on, you know, getting the first one out. You know, how can we do it and reach as many people as possible? And that's why we chose primarily, you know, Mac and Windows as the two that we target.
That's great.
So, right. Yeah, so we're certainly not ruling out more in the future, and I wouldn't be surprised if there are more in the future.
Cool.
But at least this gets you the ability to create an experience that will, you know, reach as many, you know, 98% share as possible.
And that's a great thing.
Yeah.
And you only have to write your code once. And you get to write it in Visual Studio.
Yeah, I mean, that's the great thing. You know, I'll be showing it my keynote at Mix is, and we'll have some online videos you can check out as well. But basically, you know, the cool thing is you can actually, with Visual Studio Orcus, now say file new project Silverlight, creates a project, you get IntelliSense, you get debugging support. You can go ahead and open the project up with Expression Blend if you want. And because Blend and Visual Studio share the same project format, you can actually use Blend to create all the UI and then Visual Studio to code against it and debug it. And that just works. And we even are shipping support so you can actually do debugging of the Mac from within Visual Studio. And so if you build your app inside Visual Studio, you can actually run it on the Mac, and then you can do attach to process.
Wow.
Type in the IP address of your Macintosh computer.
Nice.
And you'll see the list of all processes that are running managed code, and you can attach to, say, the Safari browser or the Firefox browser and set breakpoints and away you go, which is pretty cool.
That is incredible.
And that was pretty hard to build. But but that's all enabled with the bits that are available for download this week.
Very cool. I mean, you know, and of course, did you work with Apple at all to help pull this off, or did you just figure it out a lot on your own?
Yeah, not.
It's such a closed operating system, is why I say that.
Well,
closed in the sense that it's pretty closed.
Yeah, I mean, it's we primarily basically did it on our own, and so you know, it's you know, we've had some pretty good engineers, and so it was, you know, certainly things like the cross machine debugging.
That's cool.
With a different operating system brings with it some unique challenges. You know, we were able to get it all working. I think the hardest thing engineering-wise has been, if you look at the different, each browser has a separate plug-in extensibility mechanism. Mm. And so IE is very different from Firefox. Firefox and Safari, interestingly, use the same interface API. It's actually derived from the Netscape plug-in API from way back.
Mm.
So at surface level, looks great. You can write it once and it works. But the way they actually handle add ref release semantics and buffer pointer semantics, it turns out, is very different between Firefox and Safari.
Okay.
And so, you know, that's been the hardest engineering-wise. It's sort of undocumented, kind of, we pass you this pointer, do we reserve the right to free it at some point without telling you, or, you know, should you free it, or do we free it, or, you know, if we free it, will you later free it? And so, you know, there are a number of kind of bugs that we've had to chase down there between the different browser implementations, you know, and not just Firefox and Safari, but also IE, you know, so it's
sure.
You know, trying to figure out the exact semantics of how you host the plugin has been
sure.
Kind of fun, but it's, yeah, the benefit is, you know, we do all that work for you, and within your app, you shouldn't have to care at all, and you'll get consistent behavior across all of them.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
So, I mean, let's talk a little bit, what were some of the really big challenges that you guys faced? When you first came up with this idea, you realized it was going to be a hard thing to pull mm-hmm. off. How, you know, when did the PAL has always been there, as you mentioned earlier.
Hasn't always been there,
okay,
but we had some work early on that was working in that space. I think the hardest thing has been, you know, the hardest thing is actually focusing on the size. You know, how do you get the download size small enough? And we wanted to get to the point where, you know, in the final release, we can be somewhere between 2 and 4 megabytes in size. And that, when you're starting, you know, that's a tough challenge when you want to have video codecs that are, you know, support HD and support full screen, and you want to have audio codecs that support MP3 and support WMA, and you want to have a rich vector graphic system that lets you draw graphics and scale at any resolution, and you want to have a type system, and you want to have a dynamic language runtime so you can run Python and Ruby and JavaScript, and you start adding that list up,
sure.
And it's hard. And so, you know, one of the things that we had to do early on was basically draw budgets for people and say, you know, you have 30K.
Nice.
And people would go like, wow, you can't do anything interesting in 30K. And you'd have to kind of look at them and say, well, it was nice talking to you. And, you know, and
yeah.
Sorry, you won't be in the product.
Wow.
And, you know, have those conversations. Wow, what are you talking about? And the reality is, you know, if you really focus hard, you can squeeze a lot into a small amount of space. And so, we've had to re-implement a lot of things.
Mm-hmm.
We've had to really look hard architecturally at, hey, can we refactor this slightly?
Mm-hmm.
My favorite example is we have like a color enumeration object. So it's an enum in data type in .NET that listed colors. And we had like, 1,000 built-in colors or something.
Okay.
And so you could say, colors.black or light gray, fuchsia or whatever, and this long list. And we sort of said, well, how much is this enum taking up? And you start counting up what each string is worth,
mm-hmm.
and you add up, well, they're each a property, and property each has a field, and you go, oh, gosh, that's like 9K just for the color enumeration.
Hmm.
And you say, well, how many colors do we really need to hard code in as a strongly typed property? Well, why don't we do 6 or
nice.
8 or 9, and then just say, use the hex value for everything else. And suddenly,
nice.
9K goes to, a couple hundred bytes. And, those are the types of kind of decisions you have to make at a micro level all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
And, at a macro level from running the project, it was, constantly looking hard at, okay, this is a really cool scenario, it's a really cool feature. You can't use this much space. You have to get it smaller.
Mm-hmm.
And, that's been a good engineering challenge, and usually for most features we were able to get them pretty tight.
Mm-hmm.
And, but that certainly from an engineering perspective has been the hardest challenge.
Absolutely. So let me ask you this quick question. I mean, if I create in Orcus, I say new Visual Studio, new Silverlight project,
mm-hmm.
Visual Studio is going to let me basically reference any library that
mm-hmm.
I want.
Mm-hmm.
Let's say I decide to reference a library that's not necessarily
mm-hmm.
supported in the package.
Mm-hmm.
What does that mean?
Well, it's interesting. I mean, one of the reasons why we have as good tool support as we do,
mm-hmm.
For the first alpha release, is because we're using the same file format for assemblies that we use with a full desktop and server CLRs, and we're using the same core class library. And what's interesting is, Visual Studio will provide you IntelliSense from a compiler perspective
mm-hmm.
against whatever library assembly references are currently associated with your project. So if you create a new project and you say, hey, here's a new version of MS CoreLib,
mm-hmm.
and here's a new version of system.core.dll,
mm-hmm.
and here's a new version of Silverlight.dll,
mm-hmm.
The C# and VB IntelliSense engines will give you IntelliSense against those. And so what we basically did with Silverlight is we actually created our own MS CoreLib that
mm-hmm.
was based on the original MS CoreLib, but chopped out stuff that didn't make sense in a browser, in a browser scenario.
Sure.
And, we get built-in tool support for that. And likewise, we are able to mimic our debugging APIs so that the Visual Studio debugger just attaches like it normally would.
Nice.
And you get built-in debugging support. So that helped us bootstrap the tooling process considerably.
Mm-hmm.
What's nice is if you build an assembly that uses the subset APIs that are in Silverlight,
mm-hmm.
You can just make reference that from both a Silverlight project as well as an ASP.NET project as well as a WPF project.
Excellent.
So that does work. If you if from a Silverlight project, if you reference, for example, a control that's built with a full WPF or an ASP.NET server control,
mm-hmm.
Then when you go to compile, you'll get a compile error saying, "Okay, I don't know where this this API comes from."
Excellent.
But then the nice thing is it's not going to crash on you, and it's not a completely different file format or anything like that.
That's awesome. I mean, I guess the only reason I brought that up is just to sort of stress that you guys are sandboxed even at design time.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's important because, people,
yeah.
It's so easy to add references in Visual Studio
yep.
to almost anything.
Yeah, well, one of the nice things that we have, one of the I think the real opportunities that Silverlight gives you as a .NET developer is now to write, use .NET across all the different tiers. And so, you know, I think one thing that's important for people to understand is Silverlight does not replace HTML. It's not designed to replace ASP.NET at all. It, you know, really allows you to go ahead and write .NET code in the browser. And you're almost, you know, you will always have a server component when you're building a Silverlight application. And one of the really nice things about having .NET everywhere is that you can now inside Visual Studio have a single solution, and you can have your ASP.NET project, you can have your Silverlight project, and you can do references between the two. And so one of the things that we're shipping in the alpha is Visual Studio, a Visual Studio plugin for WordCast that gives you kind of the Silverlight support. And it is designed so that it can actually go against both ASP.NET as well as WCF web services. And you can actually wire up web service references from within your ASP.NET app to your Silverlight project.
Nice.
And so your Silverlight project can go ahead and, in a nice strongly typed way, call back to your ASP.NET app and get data back and forth or send data back and forth. Your Silverlight app can use the ASP.NET membership and forms and role management system. Mm-hmm. It just incorporates nicely into your ASP.NET app. And as part of our mixed release, we're shipping a new package we call the ASP.NET Futures release. That includes some new server controls that are specifically designed to work with Silverlight.
Nice.
And so you can very easily create a page in ASP.NET. You can add the new ASP:XAML control or ASP:media control, point at a Silverlight project, and you can go ahead and include it inside an ASP.NET project or in an ASP.NET app, no additional code required. So we're really trying to focus a lot on not just making Silverlight work great, but also looking at how does it incorporate nicely within existing .NET web applications and get a really nice client-server symmetry across there.
That's really cool. I mean, I must stress that. I mean, we've had you on Channel 9, I think, two or three times.
Sure, now. Yeah. A couple more than that, I think.
A couple more than that. And, I always like to give you props because you are one of the people who initially saw the benefit of .NET, especially on the server.
Sure.
ASP.NET, right? Yeah. I mean, you were on the original ASP team, right? Weren't you?
I started the ASP.NET team, and I was on the IIS team way back when we were doing ASP as well.
Cool. So you took the bite, and you were like, yeah, you know what? This is managed code is pretty excellent.
Yeah.
And now, the reason I'm saying this and mumbling on about this is because if you now look at where you are, we're talking about writing managed code in a browser-based application that runs not only on Windows but on the Mac and who else? And I think that's just incredible. I think from a perspective, it's good to step back and go, "Wow, .NET is really almost everywhere."
Yeah, I mean, I think that's one of the big things with Silverlight that really opens up tons of possibilities is the fact that Microsoft, obviously with .NET, we've released lots of APIs and they're all really important. Mm-hmm. A lot of our APIs are about making an existing scenario better.
Okay.
And I think what's interesting about Silverlight, and I think one of the reasons why it's for .NET, it's a pretty profound release, is it's about enabling scenarios you just can't do today. And it enables a new type of application that runs friction-free browser deployment, so it works over the internet. You don't have to worry about having someone install a large redist or spend 20 minutes installing something. You can just point a URL, the app works, and you can inside that app really incorporate richer graphics, multimedia, much richer client-side computation than's possible with JavaScript today, and as a result, end up building richer Channel 9 or a richer.
Oh, yeah.
We're going to show Major League Baseball next week,
cool.
And a much richer online experience for that. And we'll have Netflix and a whole bunch of other cool partners that are showing some great experiences that you can't build with pure HTML or JavaScript today.
Sure.
And Silverlight really opens that up in a cross-platform, cross-browser environment.
That's awesome. Well, I mean, it's amazing job, amazing work.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, we're getting there.
You're getting there. Yeah. I mean, it's very cool. I mean, and to think, as you've just mentioned, now I can use one application like Visual Studio, for example, and build three different projects, right? And as opposed to having to go do web work and do my website and then go do my server, I can do it all in the same place, and the debugging will work as I'm in the client or the server.
Yeah, so you can actually you can attach the debugger both to the browser client as well as to the ASP.NET server simultaneously. And so as you think about, as you're calling back from the client to the server, your debug session can follow that, And you know, likewise, because link support is now both on the server and on the client, you can, for example, use link to SQL or link to entities on the server in order to query data from a database, create an entity, send it across the wire via a web service into Silverlight. And within Silverlight, you can then go ahead and data bind it to a WPF control. And then if you want to, you could go ahead and use link to objects on that disconnected entity, do a further subquery against it, data bind against something else. You'll be able to update the entity, ship it back to the server, update the database.
Incredible.
And that type of end-to-end integration inside a browser across the internet, pretty darn cool.
It's huge. So we take the web seriously, huh? Web 2.0,
yeah.
Man.
Yeah. Well, it's going to be exciting because I think this is, you know, speaking from an ASP.NET, you know, coming from the ASP.NET background perspective, I think one of the things that, that this really lets us do is build applications that, you know, today, again, aren't possible to do. In that sense of, you know, there's certain types of experiences or certain types of apps that either for compatibility reasons or because of complexity reasons or usually just because, you know, browsers don't support them today, you just can't build. And this, you know, Silverlight really lets you go ahead and start tackling those types of projects and, you know, ultimately hopefully delight your users with, you know, the end result.
Absolutely, and also delight your developers who get to write managed code now.
Yeah, and hopefully as a developer perspective, it's a lot of fun, yeah.
Absolutely. Well, hey, I'm sure you have another meeting. thank you for your time.
Yeah, no, thanks a bunch.
And really look forward to seeing this at Mix.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it too.
All right, well, thank you so much. Great job, man.
Thanks a bunch.